Welcome to Five on the Floor, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast from Ethan Skolnick with Alphonse Sidney, a.k.a. Alf954. Brought to you by the Five Reasons Sports Network.
Check out the great sponsors of the Five Reasons Sports Network, and that includes MyBookie. You know, winning season has returned at MyBookie. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contest, and Squares at MyBookie. Winning season means hitting all of your parlays. I feel sorry for you if you bet on that game tonight. And props with your feet up, watching your team trounce their rivals or blow a big lead and need two Jimmy Butler free throws at the end to win. Rejoice. It's time to celebrate the NFL season as well as NBA. So when invest in your intuition. Use the promo code 5ONTHEFLOOR. That's 5ONTHEFLOOR. Spell it out and double your first deposit. It's like free money. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. From live betting to championship futures, every play you want to make is waiting at MyBookie. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, and collect your cash. Again, use the promo code 5ONTHEFLOOR and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today. Only at MyBookie. And now, today's crazy episode. All right, back here on Five on the Floor. Here's the floor plan. We're going to dissect the Miami Heat's 116-114 victory against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Heat now go up 2-0 in their second round series. They're now 6-0 in the postseason, one of only two undefeated teams, along with the Boston Celtics, who are up 2-0 against Toronto in the other Eastern Conference series. We're going to bring on today three others with me. We've got Greg Sylvander. We've got Alex Toledo, who's going to be hopping off for the Heat Zoom calls. And we've got Brady Hawk, who is standing in for Alphonse Sidney, who is running our YouTube Floor is Yours tonight. So you can check out both of us, both of these episodes. The Floor is Yours, it's going to sit up there on the YouTube channel. And I think he's got four or five guests on with him. Let's get right to it. We've seen a lot of crazy Miami Heat playoff games over the years. I remember those Heat-Knicks games and Anthony Carter over the backboard and all kinds of crazy circumstances. Allen Houston, the runner at the buzzer. Mashburn passes up the shot. Then you go further on, you know, LeBron and Dwayne blitzing Chicago in a series to close out 4-1. All the crazy stuff we've seen. Ray Allen, three in the corner, of course. This one is a top five crazy playoff game for me, guys. I mean, you start with the fact that Jimmy Butler was the seventh leading scorer on the Heat after scoring 40, made one of the most boneheaded plays I've seen a player of his caliber make at the end of the game, throwing the ball back towards his own basket when he got trapped in the corner, which ended up leading to basically the game getting tied, and then missing a free throw, and then winning it at the end after Goran Dragic committed the fifth Heat foul against a three-point shooter in the game. Giannis fouls Jimmy, fouls out of the game finally, fouls Jimmy at the buzzer and allows Jimmy, who really had nowhere to go on that play, to make two free throws, only needed one to win it. Greg, put it in perspective.
I need a cigarette and a sandwich ASAP. That was unbelievable. Like, I think top five, it's got to be in the neighborhood of that, at least in terms of craziest, tightest, most nervous moment Heat games, because of just like the little things, the you didn't know what foul was going to take place next, or the weird turnovers, or the just the backwards offense that we saw where certain guys aren't scoring, but Tyler Hero's having a huge day. It was unbelievable to watch, and it's so fitting that Jimmy's the guy who had to close it out on the line. Nobody else is at the line but him. And you see the other guys around the bench kind of nervous. I saw Hero a little nervous, bouncing up and down, and Jimmy closed it out. And ultimately, on a night where he played the way he did, if you look across, you know, Bam fouling out in only 32 minutes, this is, again, a formula where Milwaukee would have, like, if you would have given them this box score prior to the game, I think that they take it. And they had a lot of guys play a lot better in many different ways. Giannis, you know, absolutely found his groove. George Hill was really productive in 25 minutes off the bench. and they still didn't get a win. I mean, this is where I know they're not going back to the AAA for game three, and they're not going to be, you know, obviously hyped up with the crowd there, but there's something that breaks the spirit when you lose two the way that they just did. And Miami has, they have a mental advantage in this series, no doubt.
Alex, I want to go to you on some strategic stuff because I know you're going to have to bolt at some point and come back and get the perspectives on this game. Let's go through kind of what happened here before the craziness of the ending. And we're going to talk about the officials. We can't avoid it. That was one of the most atrociously officiated games I've ever seen, and not just one way either. Most of it went against the Heat, but some of the calls against the Bucks were ridiculous too, in my opinion. But just go through a strategic standpoint. The way that this game was played was more what we expected, right, coming into the series. The Heat were kind of beating the Bucks from downtown early, whereas the Bucks were getting in the paint a lot more than they did in game one.
Yep, I think you got it just right. I think, like, that's exactly – this game was a lot more representative of the two teams all season, and I think what we were expecting to see more than what we saw in game one, where Jimmy scored 40 after not really doing anything like that all season. I think this game was really symbolic of – what team this Heat team has been all season. They got going early on with the threes, like you said. They ended up hitting 17 threes, which is very much out of 45, because of course they launched at a, you know, an amazing rate, and it's good to see them hitting the threes again. We knew that that would happen, but yeah, like you said, Jimmy was like the sixth or seventh leading scorer, had like 10 points before he hit those free throws, I believe. And honestly, it's good to see that they can still do that. It's good to see that they can still go out there and hit those threes. I was a little bit worried about how well they were guarding Duncan, and they still did a good job today. But yeah, man, that's the team that we saw all season.
They kind of schemed Duncan off the floor to some degree, and we're going to get into that more too, because he was pretty much a non-factor in the second half. But I want to get into some big picture stuff with you guys, because we obviously have to put this into perspective. They're up 2-0 on the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the number one seed in the league. Okay, they're 6-0 in the playoffs. We're going to get to all of that. But Brady, you had a tweet before the game, and I think we all talked about this, that there was a little bit of a rope-a-dope that went on with Jimmy Butler. The national media started to get into it because the only player they know on the Heat is Jimmy Butler. And so they started to play on this fact that, you know, Jimmy was this dominant fourth quarter scorer, scored 40. Why wasn't Giannis guarding him? And you said basically, and I agreed with you, that this was going to free up things for other people. Jimmy at one point, I think, was like eighth on the team in field goal attempts in this game. What did you see from his approach, and how did it affect the rest of the team?
I just think he finally got back to what he did all season. Like you said, in the national media, even the Milwaukee Bucks players and coaches were kind of saying that they wanted to solely focus on the Jimmy Butler aspect of him being just a straight-up scorer, which is something that he wasn't all season. He was obviously a playmaker, a facilitator, a defender, which is something – all the things that we saw today from him, especially on the defensive end. Obviously, he made that costly turnover at the end of the game, but, you know, he came up clutch, obviously, with the free throws. But I think just this is where he thrives, is just being this guy that he can, as he said before the game, he kind of wanted to get, he mentioned Goran, Tyler, Duncan, getting, he'd rather those guys be the guys to step up in this game, because clearly they, when those guys are the main scorers, it just translates to Heat wins, and he realizes that, and he knows his role, which is what he did today with just kind of being a facilitator, at which is what he did all season.
Let's go through some of the players in this game, because some of this is going to get lost. And again, I'm going to save the perspective stuff for the second half of the pod. Goran Dragic, again, six straight 20-point games, was electric in the first half. He had 17. They slowed him down a little bit in the second half. But I think he did some of it to himself. He wasn't quite as aggressive as he was earlier in the game. We saw Tyler get a little bit more aggressive, but the Bledsoe matchup, I thought, changed things a little bit, but not early. Why not, Alex?
I'm not really sure. I just think Dragic is playing the most confident, most poised game he's had in a Heat uniform during this stretch. I think this is a great team for him to thrive on, and I think he's in a great zone right now, man. And that Bledsoe absolutely made it harder on him, but at the end of the day, he's just feeling it. The guy has cemented himself as kind of their third best player throughout this whole run. And it's just awesome to see him do it over and over and over again at 34 years old, man. Even with Bledsoe on him, he still finds ways to you know, get the matchup he wants. He keeps targeting Brook Lopez and keeps hitting floaters over him. It's just insane. That pick and roll, the Goran Bam pick and roll has been so good. And Nekias called that we're going to see a lot of that because they were going to try to target Brook Lopez in his slow feet and make him choose between Goran or Bam. And that's been a really key part of their offense. I think that's kind of what helped them really get going to not put so much pressure on Jimmy. And also so that they can get other three-point shooters open by, you know, because of the offense focusing on Jimmy and Goran being the main guys. I just think I'm happy for him, man. But it is going to be tougher on him going forward, no doubt.
34 minutes tonight. We talked about the minutes. That's kind of the pocket that he's been in, somewhere between 34 and 36. 23 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, just 2 turnovers. Led them in scoring again, which I think is now 4 out of the 6 games that he's led them in scoring. I want to get to somebody that we're going to overlook, and I want to touch on him now. Jay Crowder played 36 minutes, and those were necessary because Andre Iguodala turned his ankle. We're going to get into Derek Jones Jr. also, but Andre Iguodala turned his ankle, could not return to the game, which I did think affected things there for a little while. But Jay, you know, they have made a decision. You're going to beat us from three. You're the one, okay? We're going to let you do it. And he made 4 out of 12, which was just enough. There were some end of sequences that were tough. But he also had a couple of sequences in this game where I felt like he kept the game from getting away. He had that steal, which led to the transition basket. There were a couple of sequences defensively where he just locked guys up, just locked yep. them up. I don't want him to get lost. I mean, he had 16 and 6 tonight, 2 assists and 2 steals. He's just become invaluable.
Yeah, and also that he had a key layup on a break. There was a turnover, and somebody had threw it ahead to him, and he laid it up. It seems like an inconsequential play, but it was also a moment that, like, short. Yep. It just, like, they stopped the run for a moment. Exactly. And another
– Giannis almost blocked that one, too. It looked like Giannis was about to take
he was coming
it right
out
off
nowhere.
The backboard.
I know. And, you know, this is the thing with Jay. The key stat for him, when you're looking at all these things that he's doing, he's firing up threes as many – and Spoelstra wants him to take 12 threes, make no doubt about that. 0 turnovers. He's not making mistakes, and that's huge. When you have a guy that you're relying on to play defense the way that they are and play heavy minutes the way that they have him, for him not to make any mistakes, Spoelstra trusts him now, and he's earned that. And it's pretty unbelievable to see him continue this, because even when he didn't shoot well, he was absolutely a huge impact on the game.
It was stands out to me with Crowder is that we look at Bam being that kind of Giannis stopper, but I think Crowder should be looked at it kind of at the same level the way he's been playing against Giannis these two games. Just his physicality that he brings just seems to be clearly what we saw with Derek Jones guarding him. It was just like it's more of a force to have a physical guy on Giannis that can kind of just disrupt him. Even if there's foul calls like there was today, I think it's just it just balances out a little bit more with his offense.
Go ahead, Alex.
The Heat have definitely figured out that the physicality is kind of what gets into Giannis's head a little bit, especially when it's just multiple guys going at him. Like, I think Crowder – Alf was right, by the way, because he tweeted that Crowder would surprise people guarding Giannis. And not that
I test.
Yeah, and not that I want Crowder guarding Giannis one-on-one, because that's not really what they're doing, right? We know about the whole wall scheme at this point. But when he is there one-on-one, he knows how to box him out. He knows how to front him, so he knows how to deny the ball. And Iguodala does all of those same things, but with longer arms and bigger hands and even better timing. And then I don't think those guys can really handle him one-on-one as much, but Bam, they don't even need to throw the wall up when he's out there. Like, if he ever gets Bam on a switch one-on-one, they can go back and just collapse on every other play that they're leaving wide open, because Bam is going to do a good job.
The thing about Jay is, you know, I mean, we it's cliche to say he's a Miami Heat player, but, like, from the very first moment, he was a Miami Heat player. He's like – he has this, you know, this fearlessness. We talk about heroes' fearlessness, and we'll get into Tyler. But, like, Jay just doesn't care. Like, he doesn't care. Like, he's a role guy who, if he has an open shot, he's going to take it. If he has, you know, an assignment that looks like it's too difficult for him, he's going to want it. I don't want to go too far beyond, because I think we need to stay in the moment here. The Heat are doing something pretty impressive that may go a lot longer than a lot of people expected. So I don't really want to get too much into the offseason, but you cannot let Jay Crowder go. I mean, I just think we've hit that point. Like, it's I'm not saying you give him 3 years and blow up the 2021 plan, but you give him a nice balloon payment this offseason, because he fills so many gaps for them. And again, today, you know, without Iguodala in there and after he went out with the Korver flagrant, they needed Jay's toughness. I mean, it was absolutely critical. All right, let's get into a couple more guys here and continue to go through some of these players. Adebayo today, 15-9-3 and a steal. He did foul out at the end. He was flat in terms of plus minus. It only took 8 shots. But the Chris Bosh, big shot Bosh jumper, there's been a couple of those. There's been a couple of those lately. I still want to see him take Brooke off the dribble more often. I think it's there for him. He's not looking for it, but again, his biggest factor today, and it didn't end up mattering that much because literally the officials were going to let 30 fouls go to keep Giannis in the game. But he created the fouls on Giannis, Middleton, and Lopez with his activity. It just never stopped.
Yeah, well, the other thing with Bam is that they were out-rebounded 50-38. So when you talk about absolutely vital contributions, I know it doesn't feel like 9 rebounds is a lot in Bam Adebayo world, but ultimately those rebounds were huge. They needed every single one of them. 3 offensive boards led the team. Those are extra possessions. So it's another game where the box score is not indicative of how important he is. But the other part of this is the Heat essentially got through that fourth quarter without him on the floor. And I think that they learned some things about what they can stretch in terms of the wings and how far they can take that in clutch moments and still come out with a win.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead, Brady.
No, I think Greg hit on it right there. Just with the talking about the rebounding thing. I think it may have something to do. We heard a little bit about him watching film and working on the rebounding side with Udonis Haslam. And I think that we kind of see that in these last 2 games, it's been on full effect. I think, it's not like he said with the 9 rebounds, it doesn't seem like a lot, but I think it's just like the effort. If you just watch how many fouls he drew on Brooke Lopez and other guys down low the whole time, just being scrappy and fighting, I think that just, it speaks more volume than anything, any number that could in the stat sheet.
All right, we're going to get into some of the rest of the players here in a second. I want to tell you about another great sponsor of the 5 Reasons Sports Network, another local sponsor, and that's Mark Brown PA. It's spelled M-A-R-C. This is real estate litigation and transaction law, commercial and residential. This is also has a full-service attorney-owned title company, so they can take care of everything for you if you're in the real estate space. They've got a $295 closing fee on all refinances and purchases when mentioning 5 Reasons. If you've out there shopped for anything, that's a pretty damn good deal. $295 closing fee by mentioning 5 Reasons. They also handle evictions for landlords and tenants, and they offer flat fee evictions. They've been practicing for nearly 15 years. Get them on email. You can do that by going to Mark directly, MARC@markbrownpa.com, or call the office at 954-566-5678. Again, it's 954-566-5678. MARC@markbrownpa.com. All right, let's get into some of the other guys here, and then we're going to get into the sequences, and then we're going to put this thing into perspective. Tyler Hero, we can talk about this. What do you have, 17 he ended up with tonight? I think it was 17, 5, and 4.
6 of 13 shooting.
6 of 13, plus 5. He missed a couple late. To me, the play of the game, though, for him was that one-handed lob on time. That was to Crowder, correct? Again,
wasn't it Bam?
Bam.
It was Bam. I'm sorry. It was Bam. It was Bam. But just the I wasn't focused on the end as much as the beginning of that play. But just the feel, the touch, and also
the other thing that
got me was, and I think Doris said this a couple times, like he was upset he was not getting the ball. Like there are certain guys who shrink in those moments at the end of games, and like he was calling for it in the last 3-4 minutes of the game.
This is against his home team too, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, you know, like it's crazy when you get to a point where obviously like late game stuff, I'm going Jimmy because I'm going to subscribe to the Spo with Wade where he said, I'm always going to trust that guy. You know what? We're along for the ride with Jimmy Butler, so I'm always going to trust him. But other than Jimmy, like literally, if this, it, like, let's just say in some magical world, we're in the NBA Finals. Is it crazy to think that Hero's not like the guy that would embrace that the most? And when you think about that at his age, it's just unbelievable to see it unfold. And it's been consistent. He hasn't had it like a stinker playoff game yet, knock on wood. So, I mean, this is something where he is absolutely rising to the occasion. And it's been an unbelievable growth moment game over game.
I think another thing that stands out, I kind of talked about this a couple of times previously, but I think just the way he controls the mid-range, we saw that a couple of times today. He's just kind of searches for that shot, which is something that most guys on the team don't do. Kendrick Nunn did it throughout the season, but he continually kind of tells himself that even though he's a great three-point shooter, he's more comfortable taking one dribble in and taking that mid-range, which is just at being 20 years old and having that mentality to be like that kind of player it stands out.
Yeah. I mean, I made a comment on Twitter and I know everybody jumped on me right away that Tyler Hero may end up having the best postseason of any rookie in Miami Heat history. And I understand why people got like, what? Dwayne. And I get it. And Dwayne averaged 18-4-5 as a rookie on 45%.
They're going to say Beasley.
What's that? Oh, you thought I was going to say Beasley? Yes. No, Jay Ridge. And I get it. I understand that people remember the moments with Dwayne. But I feel like by the time this playoff run is over, there are going to be moments with Tyler also. And I also think that, remember, Dwayne played 13 games because the series were long. There were two series, but one was 7 games against the Hornets, and the other one against the Pacers was 6. And so he played 13 games putting that up. Now, Tyler's only played 6 because the Heat have only needed 6 so far. But if this thing goes into the Eastern Conference Finals, if it goes into the NBA Finals, you're looking at a guy who right now is averaging 16-4-4 on 44% shooting. It's basically what Dwayne did as a rookie. And this thing may go longer. And the other thing is Tyler's not starting, and Tyler's 2 years younger than Dwayne. I'm not saying he's going to be Dwayne Wade's. So everybody stop. But I think we need to understand what he is doing, which is ridiculous at his age.
I didn't even realize his numbers were that good.
Yes. I mean,
that off the bench is pretty.
We've come to expect it. We've come to expect it. And that's just an unbelievable moment. You can see that he's attached to the hip of Jimmy Butler in the way that he approaches these moments. He's not intimidated. He doesn't flinch. There hasn't been one second where I've said Tyler Hero looks like a rookie and everyone else looks like playoff vets. That has not happened at all. And usually every rookie has at least a moment, and we haven't seen it yet from Hero.
He looks more comfortable than Paul George looks in the playoffs. I mean, and that tells you everything. Playoff T. It's just remarkable. All right, I want to get to a couple more guys, and then I want to get into the officials, and then I want to get into the perspective here. Two more players I want to touch on real quick. And obviously, look, first thing, one we're not going to touch on much, but I wouldn't be surprised if Andre Iguodala is out for a little bit because that ankle is going to swell, and it may be a couple of games before we see him. So another reason, if the Heat can close this thing up a little quicker, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But I do think we need to talk about Derrick Jones a little bit. 7 minutes, he picked up 3 fouls in a minute and a half. But then after that, had 3 blocks, a steal, and a bucket, which was a difficult basket, okay? I mean, he went reverse.
That was nice, man.
It was sweet. Spoelstra's talked all year about their depth. Derrick had kind of gotten pushed out to being the 10th man. I'm not saying this is the kind of performance that gets him a long-term contract, but it is the kind of performance that shows why he can be valuable on a good team, because he can go in and sort of, again, plug a gap. And one of the things I think that is allowing Jay Crowder, and when he plays Iguodala, to play so aggressively is they know if they get into foul trouble, they have other wings. They could go to Derrick Jones Jr. They could even go to Solomon Hill.
It's true.
And I think that makes things a lot easier, but I want to give Derek some credit, because for a really rough start when he went in, when Giannis was just bullying him, he ended up making a pretty sizable contribution in the next 5 minutes.
He did. He was flying around, as Spo would like to say, and just being disruptive the way way that he was, the energy, the second jumps off of rebounds and stuff like that, even if he doesn't necessarily grab a board, just kind of his activity and the length, it all showed. And those are those moments where if Iggy needs to sit out a couple games or one game because the games are only, you know, back to back to, like, there's only one day in between each game. So if Iggy has to miss the next one, I think you feel a little more comfortable, maybe increasing minutes where applicable, but also Derrick Jones Jr. can plug right in.
Yeah, no, I think I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep doing that.
No, you go. You go.
I mean, I would agree with you that he didn't do such a great job those first couple minutes that he was in against Giannis. Giannis is just too big for him, honestly, one-on-one. But he did a good job following the scheme and just kind of doing what he needed to do after that. It's definitely not a great matchup for him at all. He's not nearly as physical as Iguodala or Crowder, so it's tough. But I do think he can get a role, especially if Iguodala is out. Just because I think he could really fit on in that defense, specifically not guarding Giannis one-on-one. If he was one of the help guys, I think he'd look even better because I think that's where he really thrives, and I think he would look better guarding a wing and then kind of helping off from the side. But either way, that was the role that they needed him to play in that moment because of the rotation and because of Iguodala being out. I think he did a good enough job, and it's just a defensive playmaker because we know he's not really contributing much on the other end. So it was good to see him go out there and make multiple defensive plays, and they needed that, man. They needed that.
I think Alex hit on it right there. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I think they're going to try to use Derek if Iguodala is out. I think they're going to use Derek kind of in the as the help, the kind of like the helper off the bench, maybe with a Crowder if Crowder's guarding him or anybody else. I think that's where he's thrived all season. If you look back at those games against the Bucks in the regular season, he was the guy that was disrupting him with the help defense. I don't know the exact number with the steals, but He was absolutely incredible just with that. And that's what a lot of guys on this team do with the help defense. But he's kind of like at the forefront, I think, as a representation of what these guys do on that level. And I think we're going to see that in this next game. Because I agree also with what they said, with just he's not big enough, I don't think, to guard him, especially when he gets going. He's just too much to handle for him. And I think we're really going to see that him switch off and guard somebody else.
All right, last player we're going to get into today because there was a contribution made, and I think it's going to have to continue in this series because he presents different problems for Milwaukee, which is Kelly Olynyk, who had very good moments early in the first half. And it's just clear Brook Lopez doesn't want to come out and guard him. I mean, that's going to be there for Kelly the entire series. He's not consistent. We've kind of gone through this with him all season, but this is a matchup that plays to his strengths in a lot of ways, at least on the offensive end. And he played 16 minutes, and I thought they were good minutes tonight.
Yeah, and ultimately, the other part with Kelly Olynyk is in this series, he is 4-for-5 from three. And I know that that's a very
– always there.
It's a small stat, yeah, but that is – it'll keep them honest. As long as he continues to shoot at that kind of clip or even in the neighborhood of that clip, he's a threat from out there. And they just need him to be that kind of threat – for, you know, small periods throughout the game. It's not like something where they have to rely on him big minutes, barring any injury or foul trouble. So ultimately, as long as he keeps them honest that way, and if you get some extra rebounds from him and stuff like that, and not a bunch of mistakes, he's still proving to be a viable option in the rotation. I don't see any reason why they would look to any other big to play because he definitely stepped up tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly, I love the way that Spo is using him because, like you said, there's no pressure on him to really be out there for too long. And we know how he can be on defense, and it's just tough to really have him out on the floor when Giannis is out there. But I do really like the idea of him on the floor whenever Brook is in because they're both obviously slow-footed, and he can kind of – like, I'm not really worried about Kelly taking on Brook unless Brook gets just, like, great post position. Other than that, I'm good with that matchup, man. I'm good with Kelly being in there, you know, a few minutes every second and – third quarter or whenever Spo decides to play him. I just think that pick and pop three, whenever Lopez is in, it's always going to be there because Lopez is always going to be dropping back. And like that was something that the Magic went to with Vucevic over and over. And that's what won them that first game when he hit like five threes. And I just think Kelly, you know, he's going to keep doing it, man. He's going to keep getting wide open threes.
I think Kelly's just that one of those guys. Like, I don't want to put him in the same category as obviously as Duncan or anybody, but he has the capability of being that same kind of spark, as you mentioned. Just when he gets hot, he gets going just as those guys do. So I think we're going to see one of those games in the next couple of days that he's just going to have one of those just great shooting where he just can't be stopped. Cause we saw that in a couple of those bubble games that he had, that's the reason why he's in the rotation right now. And I think that Spoelstra is going to kind of include him a little bit more in those kind of plays, like just to, because they know that that's what he's kind of done his whole career. He's just been that kind of guy. We've seen in the playoffs with Boston in that, it was game seven, when he's just a guy that could just spark you just to get you going and just be a rotate, just a guy off the bench that's just going to get you, like how Jimmy said, just get you going that these other guys that are capable of doing it.
All right, we're going to get into the officials because I know everybody wants to talk about that. Before we do, I want to tell you about where I was today. I went down to North Miami to visit with Mark over at U Brake Wheel Fix to check out what they do there. It's really cool. I nearly burned myself a couple times because I'm clumsy like that. But you got to check out U Brake Wheel Fix. They're located just south of Aventura in North Miami. They've got 15 years of experience in wheel repair and refinishing. They do repair of cracked, bent, curved, and damaged wheels. They also can refinish and powder coat back to factory specifications, along with over 5,000 available custom colors. Now, they do the vice colors, but when I was there today, they had the Dolphins colors up. They're working on a truck, and I put it on the Five Reasons Sports IG page. Make sure you check that out, because you can do that to your vehicle also, or again, do the heat vice colors. Ask him for anything. You want Inner Miami, he'll do Inner Miami. So visit U Brake Wheel Fix. Again, that's across all social media platforms, including Twitter, IG, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or call 305-748-0112, 305-748-0112. The website is U Brake, that's U, just the letter, Brake, Wheel, Fix.com. All right, let's get to it. That was a Mark Davis crew tonight. And I had a bunch of people, friends of mine, my family, other friends, and they're like, I can't watch this. I mean, is this a Heat homer perspective that I'm getting because I'm in a feedback loop on Twitter that it was that against the Heat tonight, or were they just bad? Because I feel like, A, you cannot breathe on a three-point shooter anymore in any way, or at least with this particular crew. And there was no consistency. Giannis, as Doris Burke pointed out, committed three offensive fouls on one play, and none of them were called. And it does seem, and I've noticed this, this is now the third game I've noticed this, the other two were not against the Heat, they will not give Giannis a fifth or sixth foul when he's accumulated four. It's just like, it's just not going to happen. Was it as bad as it looked to me?
It was absolutely bad. There were hundreds of plays that are questionable, but ultimately the Bucks shot seven more free throws than Miami did. So there probably is some level of perspective in terms of the way we're viewing the game. Now, obviously, the call on Goran there at the end to the foul on, I think it was Middleton who took that shot. I thought that was completely ridiculous, but they were consistent and they called it with Jimmy down at the other end also. That doesn't mean it's not infuriating. That doesn't mean it's not completely an eyesore of a game to watch, but ultimately, if Miami gets 32 free throws, Milwaukee got 39 free throws. At some point there, we have to look at it as it was just called like a tight game.
Yeah, I didn't love those calls, man. There was a lot of bad ones, but specifically down the stretch, calling that Middleton one, oh my God. I just thought like Dragic had his arms up, wasn't even leaning into him. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then I'm glad that they were consistent about it and called on the other end. But Giannis legitimately made contact with Jimmy on the jumper. Whereas Middleton, I didn't really see any contact under, despite Dragic going under him. That's really all I saw. And that was really annoying, man.
But Alex, let me challenge you a little on this. Because
it's a tough job. I'm not trying to bag on the refs.
No. It was ugly for sure. I'm not questioning from the official's perspective. I'm saying if you're Dragic, should you be contesting at all? I mean, it was 27 feet, right? 27, 28 feet. Like, should you be contesting?
I think
because
you have to.
I mean, you know how the officials are calling it. They'd already called four of them on you during the game.
They called four of those. The landing. Oh
on threes. So essentially, like, I think what Ethan's alluding to is that you close out hard, but you're measured in your closeout. You know what I mean? So that know that you don't hit him and you don't get close enough. And if he makes it, hey, hats off to him. You're still in a position where you don't go down from that possession, even if he makes it. So, but I think it's just ingrained in their Heat DNA to close out the way they do.
Yeah. But again, seven times in the game, five against the Heat, two against Milwaukee on three-point
shooters. What they really should have done is foul Giannis. Is that even allowed anymore? Can you just like foul somebody off the ball and they go to the free throw line?
I think it would have been two in the ball, right?
Oh, that's right. That's what they did. That was the amendment.
I think it would have been two in the ball, so you couldn't do that. But look, I understand Middleton. To me, the guy I was concerned about there for the Heat was George Hill, because in those situations, he's deadly. And that was the big concern. But yeah, I mean, Middleton's a plus 3-point shooter.
Well, he was about a 50-40-90 difficult on him.
No, I get it. But you know, he's 27 feet at the end of the game, and they've been calling that thing the whole time. I'm just like, what is Goran going to do to contest that thing anyway?
He didn't hit it three all night either.
I would have just gotten.
And talking about just like the Heat's kind of like how they were officiating. I think it's just the part that just doesn't make sense to me is that Giannis is a player that you kind of have to be physical with on the defensive side. There's no way that you're not going to be making contact with him when he's driving to the rim like that. So it's kind of hard to be able to be that lenient with the calls when it's a guy that plays to that effect. That's just the part that kind of stands out to me.
I think that I want to talk about the play after that call. Which, you know, the ball, you mentioned this earlier in the episode, Greg, about how, you know, you're going to ride with Jimmy down the stretch. Like, you know, I'll go to my grave with Dwayne Wade at the end of the game, which is, you know, a quote that Eric gave me that then he ended up repeating 1,000 times afterwards. And I understand it to a certain degree, but there was nothing happening on that play.
Yeah.
I mean, what was supposed to happen? Because the way Jimmy was being guarded by Wes Matthews in the second half, he was not getting clean.
No.
He just wasn't. I mean, they were loading. Wes is a really physical defender. That's the kind of defender I think you need against Jimmy. I don't think height does it against Jimmy. I think it's just toughness. Like, Jay Crowder would be a good defender on Jimmy.
Wiry strength and good hands. And they essentially, right. I think that they thought Jimmy was going to spring open a little bit more than he actually ended up getting, because they essentially cleared out that side of the floor for him at some point. They just anticipated he would catch it a little cleaner with a little bit more time to work. So I didn't love the play call either. I felt like there's more creative stuff they can do to kind of whip the ball around and find someone wide open. But ultimately, they gave it to him. They trusted him, and he got free throws out of it.
Well, he did. But can't you make the argument, Alex, that maybe at some point, if you trust Jimmy that much, maybe at this point with what he's done through the first six playoff games, maybe you could put the ball in Goran's hands there at the end also? I know that hasn't been the thing that Spo has traditionally done over the past, 5 years that Goran's been in town. But I don't know. In that game, I would trust Goran as much as I would trust Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea. I was kind of hoping that they would pass it into Hero there. But at the end of the day, I trust Jimmy. It was good to see him make those free throws. I was still very nervous at the line. But can I read to you one quote, speaking of Jimmy Butler? If the game did happen to go to overtime, we were still going to win that game.
well, there was no Bam and there was Giannis, so I guess you canceled each other out.
I want to see if you would have said that if Giannis never fouled out.
I mean, we were going to see UD in the third overtime picking and popping with Kendrick Nunn.
UD checking Giannis? Yeah.
Probably, right? I mean, that's kind of where we're headed. I mean, look, Jimmy dodged a bullet to some degree, you know, from a national media perspective, because that play at the end is kind of – there were so many things that went wrong with it. Not just the missing the one free throw, because I kind of expect Jimmy to miss one out of two in the end, sort of like Dwayne used to.
Yep.
But even though Jimmy's a better free throw shooter. But, like, that play at the end, there were so many things that were wrong with it. First, no one came to help Jimmy when he was stuck in the corner. Second – I mean, there's a million things he could have done that would have been better. Like, he had two timeouts.
Yeah, that's it. Call timeout.
Call timeout. Or Spo. Why not Spo?
Yeah, that's what
right in front of Spo.
He was right next to the ref. It kind of looked like he was going to call a timeout, but then he ended up not. He was standing right there next to him like he was intending to.
He should have. But you don't. But, like, the one thing, like, I mean, it's taught in third grade. Don't throw the ball. It's like when you play soccer. Don't kick the ball in front of your, in, you know, near your keeper, basically. Okay, in that situation. Don't put it in front. Don't cross.
The man basically turned around midair to throw that pass, and then threw it right towards like a 7-footer.
To Goran under his basket, a 6'3" guy. Like, yeah. No. Like,
who was being guarded in his zone defense by Brooke Lopez at that time, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do it, chuck it down the court, right? Like, okay, or literally throw the thing out of bounds would have been better. Just throw it out of bounds, reset, okay? And obviously, you know, the Bucks would have had the ball, but you can't throw the ball to your backcourt. So Jimmy got bailed out in some ways. I thought he played a really strong game defensively. I thought his intentions in this game, his approach was good. I was waiting for a takeover, but it was clear Wes Matthews wasn't going to let it happen. But that play would have been everywhere if they lose that game. Everywhere. Okay.
You know what?
He got away with it.
You know what sucks for Milwaukee is that Miami still hasn't played their best game, to be really, really honest.
Save it. I want to do that after this break because that's where we're going with this. I want to tell you about another great sponsor of the Five Reasons Sports Network, and that's our friend Louis Peters at State Farm. This is an agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the entire United States. More than 60 years of combined experience in the insurance industry. These are local agents that understand South Florida's unique market. Access 24/7. That's if you go online at louispeters.com, louispeters.com. Or you can walk in during the day. They're in Miami, Southwest 117th Avenue, or you can, as I said, you can click in or you can call in 305-275-5585. Again, that's 305-275-5585. This is personalized service tailored to each customer. No cookie cutter solutions. And you get to talk a little sports as you can with any of our sponsors. Louis and I were going back and forth on Twitter tonight. Me from the Five Reasons Sports account. So check it out, louispeters.com, life insurance, car insurance, any kind of insurance, hospital insurance, whatever it is you need. I'm going to be sending my friends over to louispeters.com to become his clients. All right, let's get into some perspective here because you hit on it. We were talking on the pregame on the YouTube channel about how if the Heat play their best game and the Bucks play their best game, I feel that the Heat's best game is better. I feel like the Heat are the better team. Not just a better matchup. I feel like they're the better team. I feel like they have more options, more places that they can go, whereas the Bucks are completely reliant on what Giannis and, to a lesser degree, Chris Middleton create for them. Whereas there's just more options for Miami. And I just think when Miami playing the kind of defense that they played in stretches tonight, where they're all over the place, whether they're switching or they're not switching, they're long. I think the national media is paying attention to it now. Like, to me at this point, and I picked the Heat in six, this is not an upset. It's not an upset. In fact, I mean, the Heat, these teams have played each other five times now, and really the Bucks have been better for one half. And that was the second half of the first bubble game that they played the seeding game. And in that game,
that first quarter, game one.
Right. Well, in the first quarter, right. But no Jimmy Butler and no Goran Dragic in that game. Other than that, the Heat have been better. Like, they're going to win this series and go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like,
you're calling it?
I mean, I called it before the series, yeah, but
are you calling it now? Now, yes, that they're up 2-0, that they're going to finish this.
Yes, they may not finish it in four, but they're going to finish. They're going to finish it. They're going to finish it. They're better. They're better.
Good. Well, and another reason why they why this isn't an upset anymore is that, like, and I hate to be cliche here, but the Heat have less deer in headlights. Get it? You can just see, like, literally these guys like Hero and Goran. They're not afraid of these moments. Jimmy is leading them. They're all following that lead, and they know that they've tapped into something that Milwaukee is aware of. That they're certain that the wing defense and the way that they're guarding Giannis and crowding him, crowding Middleton, that although they're going to get theirs because they're a great team, that they can still win. And all we're waiting for is that barrage of three-point shots when Duncan Robinson's 6-for-7 or something like that. And that's a whole element of this that they're not even going to – that they haven't even seen. And let's say that they key on Duncan the whole series, then what we've already seen open is going to remain open. So Milwaukee has to feel disconcerted going into game three.
Yeah, man. I mean, you hit it – like you nailed it when you talk about the deer in the headlights thing, which, by the way, that's a great pun because that's exactly – how the Bucks look out there, man. Like Giannis the whole time. Again, there's I'm not trying to be the, you know, the body language monitor guy, but at the end of the day, they just were not giving off great body language, man. Giannis had those scared eyes on his face the whole time. The guy is tired. You can tell he is frustrated with how many guys are throwing at him, and it's a lot. It's a lot for him to handle, man. It does remind me a little bit of the Raptors, where obviously the Heat don't have the top to down, just, you know, A-plus defenders or whatever, but they have so many guys, and it's just getting to them, and they're not able to create enough looks. Middleton, you know, can get hot as a shooter, but at the end of the day, you're not afraid of the guy one-on-one. And if they're stopping the Giannis Middleton pick and roll, then I'm really not afraid of the Bucks, man, because that is like the one thing that I think could have really messed with the Heat offensively. And the Heat are shutting it down. The Heat are switching it hard, and they're denying Giannis on the roll every time that they run it. You're right, man. They absolutely have the momentum. They've outplayed the Bucks in two games, and this is still going to be an upset. Let's talk about perspective here, because I mentioned it a bunch of times. This is the number five highest point differential of all time, the Milwaukee Bucks this season. And they won, what, 66 last year? In reality, Giannis should have won Defensive Player of the Year last year, too. We're talking about, I mean, this is unreal what they're doing right now, even with what we know about how they played the Bucks all year, how they played Giannis all year, and that they have the guys to guard him. It's still unreal that they pulled it off in two straight games versus a team that basically won 67 in back-to-back years and had a guy who could have and should have won MVP and DPOY back-to-back years. This is unreal what they're doing.
It's unreal that I didn't go to my bookie and throw $1,000 on this a few months ago. When
oh my god, I was late on the bed and I'm so upset, man.
I did put money on him +350 before this series, but could have been a lot more a lot earlier. I mean, basically everything that we have said on Five on the Floor, if you've been listening, has played out in this matchup. That the Heat adding the wings at the trade deadline was going to be critical. You know, again, the way that the Bucks play defense, playing into the Heat's strengths, and also the Bucks not being the same in the bubble, that they were going to lose momentum. And I'm looking right now at some of their
Goron theory.
Well, and the Goron theory has played out too, but I'm looking at some of their older guys tonight. Marvin Williams, 1 of 6 from the field, 0 of 4 from three. Kyle Korver had 1 3. George Hill was pretty good, 5 of 9. Lopez was pretty good. Wes Matthews, you know, played good defense, was 2 of 8 from the field. They have some younger, some older guys who haven't really rounded into shape. And here's another stat. This stat just jumps off the page. Chris Middleton was a +18 tonight. Giannis was a -7. Giannis has been a big minus in both games. And when you look at it, they were better in the non-Giannis minutes tonight than they were in the Giannis minutes. Because again, Miami has frustrated him, and I want to let Brady close here, but I got a text. Everybody's sort of waiting for the text I get, because I dropped one the last time, so everybody's asking me on Twitter. This came in from someone, not a Heat official, but somebody associated with one of the players. They just need one bench guy to get hot, and it's a sweep.
It's gonna be Hero.
I think, like I said before, there's a chance it could be Kelly. I just think there's a couple guys on that bench unit that there's a chance that one of them could get hot. I think we're kind of getting towards a Kelly Olynyk game that's going to just pop off the board, and he's just going to – I think they're just kind of going to – they're looking at this bench unit. They're going to be watching Tyler Hero. They're going to be keying on him a lot after, especially as we talked about before, of him being just spectacular in this game today. But I think they're going to get a little bit just lackadaisical kind of with Kelly Olynyk, and I think this is kind of what we're heading towards.
It may be him. It may be Tyler. There may be a Kendrick Nunn game in here, and that to me is the point.
We still haven't gotten the Duncan game, like Leif said.
And that we haven't gotten – well, Duncan did have 3 threes today, so he still hasn't gone since December without having, you know, at least 3 threes in one of two games.
That's all you really need from him if they're going to keep playing like this, man, where you're not worried at all about their defensive execution and defensive pressure in the game plan, and you just have to worry about how many threes are going down on offense. They have so many shooters that I don't really need Duncan to have one of the 7 or 8 three-pointer games. I mean, that would be nice. That would be great. But I just think they have so much going for them right now, weapon-wise, where it's like, yeah, Duncan hit 3 threes. Good job, man. That's what we needed you to do there. He's not getting cooked on defense. I'm happy with Duncan's effort, man. He was even shooting when the shot was barely even there. Like, He wants to get those shots off.
Yeah,
and it's going to seem it seemed like Duncan, whenever he had those kind of big 3-point games, it was kind of in the Indiana series where the offense was kind of executed kind of to perfection. Yeah. But I think in these types of Milwaukee games, it's more of a sloppy kind of style that a lot of the threes have come off of the, you know, offensive tip backs or types of stuff like that. I think that doesn't benefit Duncan as much as the other guys. Like,
no,
like,
it benefits Hero. It benefits Hero.
Right.
The guys chasing him are doing a better job than the Pacers guys for sure.
But the thing is, Hero is more of an improvisational player, and mm-hmm. and so I there's more spots on the floor that Tyler can get his shot off, and so I think what Brady's speaking to is true. I think is in a choppy series like this, you know, with the way that they can guard the three. It's Tyler who can do some of that intermediate stuff, and that's why I think there may be a Kendrick Nunn game here before we're over with. I see, to me, that's the problem for Milwaukee, and why again Miami's going to win this series is we can name three or four guys that we can say, yeah, there's going to be a game. Okay, I'm looking at Milwaukee's roster. Who beyond Giannis and Middleton? I think we've seen the best of Lopez. Is there going to be
Tom Bledsoe have a good game?
Here's the thing. Just let's pray that they don't put Ilyasova in. That's the only guy.
Yeah.
Clearly, Budenholzer is getting outcoached. He has no clue. Didn't do a good enough job scouting Ilyasova in his past performances.
No, but I am surprised. And Pat Connaughton, by the way, today in 12 minutes was a minus 19 in a 2-point.
Maybe they shouldn't have played him down the stretch in game one to.
Right. Well, that's but again, I go through and I say, who on Milwaukee is going to have a game? And it's just Giannis or Middleton. That's it. And I'm not saying that Giannis can't give you 45, but the way that
Brooke already had the game,
right? So I think that makes it challenging. All right, check out all of our other sponsors. Of course, Biscayne Bay Brewing, which I'm going to grab a couple of those right now. They sponsored our pregame and our postgame shows today. So make sure you check out Biscayne Bay Brewing Company. Go online and check out where you can get their beer because they're in a variety of Publixes and other stores here in South Florida. But make sure you check first. And if they don't have it at the store, make sure you ask for it. That's the official beer of Inter Miami, the Miami Marlins, and, of course, Five Reasons Sports. We'll be back tomorrow night. I'm going to go check out how Alf destroyed our YouTube channel. Make sure he didn't get us sued. Have a great night. Heat up 2-0.
Culture.
Thank you for listening to the Five on the Floor on the Five Regional Sports Network.